You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Wow! I feel good.
I really feel good. Good evening, everybody. It's been 168 hours since we talked to you last. I'm Al Waterloo, coming live to you from the KPWK radio studios. Here at the KPWK airport, it is Sunday night, 8 p.m. Central Time here in Chicago, Illinois. And that could mean only one thing.
It must be Simple Flight Aviation Radio.
Absolutely. I think there's a great buzz around here at the studio tonight. And I got to contribute to you, Mr. Mark Eppner.
Uh-oh. What did I do now?
Spark of the studio.
I provided a spark?
You sure did.
All right. I'd love to know how. I might do it again on purpose.
Well, you just showed up and on time, every time. It's great.
Yeah, I didn't know about tonight.
You'd make a great airline pilot.
Now you're talking to my dream.
Yeah, well, no, it's a great night here at Chicago. We're broadcasting live from the KPWK airport. If you don't know where that is, pull out your Jep Chart or 4Flight app and look us up.
Maybe even X-Wing. We can't leave X-Wing out of this.
I haven't used X-Wing
either
yet.
Have I, or Garmin's, or Bendix King just came out with my Wingman, at least a beta version.
Wow.
So, yeah, there are lots of apps coming, but you can find KPWK. It's a great place, and we got to start posting some pictures, because I'm looking at a Lear 45 out the window there behind you.
It's a Lear 45. I see a old Mitsubishi jet. Do you know what those were?
No, the Mitsubishi. I always think of the turboprop, the MU-2s.
Well, that's what you'd call a beach jet nowadays.
No way.
Yeah, way.
I always tell myself I'm pretty knowledgeable about this stuff, and every time I come here, I feel less than smart.
Well, hey, you know what? We all have a lot of learning to do. As we learned that for last week, a good pilot is always learning.
That's right. Thank you, Captain Schmelzer.
Absolutely. Well, I think we've got a great show in store for us tonight. And we're actually pretty excited. I mean, for
we're
us.
Actually pretty excited.
Well, actually.
I'm always excited.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, we are, now that you mention it.
No, we really are. Tonight is our first night broadcasting live from simpleflight.net. That is our very own live radio feed. We're glad to be coming to you from the home site, I guess you would call it.
Yeah. No, it's a neat progression, and we're still working on some video opportunities, but it's coming along very nicely, and we appreciate all the positive comments that we continue to get from people now worldwide, right?
I know. I can't believe that. Who was it? We got a tweet from a gentleman in Ireland who says that he listens to the show and really enjoys it.
Yeah, it's exciting. And again, we're just doing it because we love it, and I think we're no different than any of our listeners in that regard when it comes to aviation.
Absolutely. Well, you know, since we're broadcasting live from the KPWK airport, that kind of reminded me of something. Something funny, a little joke.
Yeah, well, you know, every time we say PWK, you probably didn't watch it, and I recommend you go back, but there was a TV show called WKRP in Cincinnati when I was growing up, and it was very, very funny. You have to know the characters, but there was one scene, and as we get close to Thanksgiving, I'm going to play a quick little few-second clip, and and of course I went to push it. You know, I'm using an iPad, and my thumb always hits the wrong button here when I'm pointing with my finger. Let's see if I can.
Oh, my goodness. You know, you got to get...
All right, here we go. I got it.
They got a mind of their own.
So here we go. Let's see if people remember this. Still loading.
Yeah,
we're not supposed to have dead time here.
You know what? There is no dead time. And, you know, sometimes, actually, when you fly a red-eye flight, dead time is... Here we go.
as God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
Okay. I don't know if people heard it. It's pretty quiet. But it said, as God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly. And it was a very funny scene where a promotion by this radio station was to have basically provide free turkeys to people, and they were going to drop turkeys from a helicopter in a shopping mall. And so they start dropping them, and of course they're crashing to the earth, blood everywhere.
Oh, shit.
And let's just say it wasn't the greatest thing, but then this guy comes back as the station manager and says, as God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly. So I thought that was something that jogged my memory and would really turn out to be a nice little Sunday night chuckle for us, but I wanted to do my own. I just didn't want to play someone else's. And so I'm reminded of a very similar story. And it seems, you know, we've talked a lot in aviation about bird strikes and what they can do to an airplane. Have you ever had a bird strike?
I have. I got a certificate. I hit
from
a bird.
The bird?
No, well, on behalf of the bird. No, I got a certificate. I've got to dig it out and see if I can tweet it and post it to Simple Flight somewhere. And that'd be under hashtag Simple Flight. But it was 6 in the morning in Champaign, Illinois. I was in a 152,
oh, no.
November 4-9 or 6-7 Bravo. And Migratory Waterfall were being broadcast in the ATIS. And I go do a touch and go on the go. Boom. Right through the prop.
No kidding.
Right. No kidding at all.
Wow.
And then I won a certificate, or I received a certificate acknowledging the fact that there's one less bird in the population.
Well, I was flying back one night from, gosh, it had to be Iowa City, which has always been a good destination for me, knowing that I have family
there.
That's
a great place.
Oh, it is. That's where I got my license back in 1976.
We love it.
But I was actually pretty high up, much higher than I thought. It was night, and didn't even know I hit anything. And I came back, and my wing was just full of blood and feathers. So
I had hit
something. And I think I was, you know, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 feet up by Rockford.
Yeah.
And very surprised. And that's happened to me twice, night flights where I find blood on the wing. Either that, or I'm hitting a parachutist or something. I don't know.
I hope it's just the bird. Yeah, right.
Especially because of the feathers. But all kidding aside, you know, it is very important that we understand the dangers that can happen to the occupants of the aircraft. And, you know, the Federal Aviation Administration has a unique device for testing the strength of windshields on airplanes.
Right.
I didn't know if you knew that.
No, I didn't.
Well, it's basically a gun that launches a dead chicken at a plane's windshield at approximately don't laugh at me, man. At approximately the speed the plane flies. And they can, you know, measure the durability and what happens to an airline windscreen. And so the theory is that if the windshield doesn't crack from the carcass impact, it'll survive a real collision with a bird during flight. Well, I won't name any names, but let's just say over the pond, there were some people over there who were very interested in this and wanted to test a windshield on a brand new locomotive. Because
nice.
They run into birds, too.
Very nice.
And they were developing it and asked if they could borrow the, for lack of a better term, I'll call it a dead chicken gun. Okay?
How do and I get
so
one of those?
They borrowed this FAA chicken launcher. Maybe that sounds a little bit better. And they loaded the chicken and fired. And the ballistic chicken shattered the windshield, went through the engineer's chair, broke an instrument paddle, and embedded itself in the back wall of the engine cab. And our partners across the pond, if you will, were stunned and asked FAA to recheck the test to see if they did everything correctly. And the FAA reviewed the test thoroughly, and they only had one recommendation.
What was that?
To use a thawed chicken.
Yeah. Yes, that is a, I guess that's a very Thanksgiving-esque.
Yeah, joke. Even though there was chickens at the end.
Yeah, right. Well, that's who would have thought that
entire frozen chickens at the windshield.
I'm sure. Can you imagine the formality of that report when you read it? There's about 18 cover pages, and then one sentence: FAA final recommendation: use thawed chicken. Unbelievable.
Yeah. So enough of that. I got you smiling. I always like to get a smiling, although we both have pretty big smiles once 8 o'clock comes around.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, I think it's absolutely great. But
so I think we got a pretty good show tonight.
We sure do.
But we have a few obligatory items first, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, right. You know where I was actually thinking would be a great place to have a log cabin?
A log cabin?
Yeah, a log cabin. Have you ever thought about that? If you had, you know, a second home or something like that, or if you were to just have, I guess, some peace and quiet, you would have a home just somewhere out, way out there.
Okay.
Have you? Have you ever thought about
actually,
that?
Actually, you know, I've thought about the summer home or the weekend getaway. It never looks like a log cabin in my mind,
what
though.
Does it look like?
I don't know. A little bit more upscale, maybe.
A little bit more upscale.
I don't know. I never think about it, although I could probably be happy even in an RV, you know, just tooling around.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess that. Well, when I have a log cabin, I think it would just be absolutely great to have a log cabin. When you get your RV, and I hope you mean RV8.
Yeah, not. I didn't mean the thing you put in the on the road.
Yeah, I hope so. And you can come out and visit me in my log cabin in Boise, Idaho.
Boise.
Yeah.
Actually, I know some people in Boise.
No kidding.
Yeah, you need any potatoes?
Yeah, well, I'm a big fan of the football team out there. Did you know their stadium, the football stadium, is blue?
Or the field is, yeah, absolutely. I've seen it many times on TV.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was thinking today, I was flying back, I'm like, what's the weather in Boise right now? It's got to be absolutely fantastic.
I would love to know. Do you have any clue on how we can find out?
Well, let's figure it out. Let's call and find out.
2 Zulu, wind 250 at 03, visibility 6, mist, sky condition broken 7500, overcast 9000. Temperature 1.1 Celsius.
Whoa.
2.0.
Not at all.
Celsius. Altimeter 3002.
Perfect.
Remarked. Density altitude 2,900.
Very nice.
Boise. Whoop, that's Boise, huh?
Boise. Boise, Idaho. That's a fun town.
I've not been there. Actually, my oldest son worked in Montana, Helena, Montana, and that's the closest I've gotten to Boise when I went and visited him.
Boise's a great place.
Yeah.
The
whole Northwest I love very much every time I go out there.
Yeah. No, it's really cool. I like it. That was one of my favorite overnights.
Really?
I used to fly for the airline. Yeah. It was just great. I remember we flew there in the winter and the summer. It gets really hot, gets really cold, it gets snowy. It's kind of a Four Seasons type of place.
Yeah, see, I'm not excited about that. I used to live for 1 year, actually 10 months, in Fort Lauderdale.
Really?
Yeah, and people say, oh, no seasons. And I said, I don't care, right? I enjoyed the weather very much there, although we're very, very happy to be in the Midwest, and we love Chicago as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, this is where our radio studio is at.
And that was started on that path many, many years ago.
Exactly. Well, that's a good journey it has been. But did you know that, you know, aviation has evolved, and many special things have happened, and cool things have happened on this particular date, October 28th. All throughout, since the conception of aviation, all the way to now.
Yeah, we've had some wonderful 1909, 1913, those kinds of things.
Right.
But something tells me you're
sunk too.
Yeah, something tells me you're leading up to this day in aviation history.
How could you tell? Was I that obvious? I hate being predictable.
Yeah, no, you're predictable.
Bummer.
That's okay. We call it dependable.
Well, I'm glad that dependable is predictable in disguise.
Yeah.
Well, that's all right. But what happened? Do you have anything? Do you have any memorable events that happened here in aviation, October 28th?
Yeah, actually, as I think back, and 1972 was a year I'll never forget. Again, not to give away too much, but happened to graduate high school back then.
All right.
And
congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Don't tell anyone. I don't know if I ever made it. But the Airbus A300, what do you think happened on the Airbus?
Congratulations.
Oh, I knew I was getting cheers from somewhere. What do you think was going on with the Airbus A300 in 1972 on this date?
I don't know. Was it a cocktail design? Cocktail napkin?
No, actually, and many people, I don't know if they know it or not, but the A300, first of all, was the world's first twin-engined wide-body airline.
Was it really?
Yeah, yeah. And on this date, back in 1972, it completed its very first test flight.
Really?
Yeah. So, and you know, I remember the DC-8s and the 707s, the four engines, the Electras, which was a turboprop that American flew in the 60s. Everything to me was four-engine, and of course, then the DC-9s and all, but under the wing, the wide body, that signaled a real change. And so the Airbus A300 on this date in 1972 really started that shift, if you will, to what we now feel is pretty commonplace today.
Absolutely. Well,
how about you?
I've got, it's kind of a sad day for narrow body jets.
Okay.
You know, back in 1982, Air France flew its last revenue flight in a Boeing 707 in its fleet type.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was kind of, I guess that it's kind of sad in a way because it's a beautiful airplane, the 707. Do you know when it first debuted?
Oh, my goodness, no. I couldn't come up with that.
1958.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You know what? I would have guessed it somewhere in the around 1960, so I was within a few years.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's kind of cool that there's a 58 in front of that. Or, well, it's 1958. And
what, are we going to talk about Barons now?
Oh, we can. Do you want to?
No, let's keep going.
No, I think that the cool thing is that these, you know, even though it was a really cool airplane, and it's unfortunate to see it no longer, think of all the cool airplanes that have come about and are flying now. So, you know, as one goes by, as the sun sets on one airplane, there's something just as awesome to replace it.
Yeah, and the other thing that we both love is whether it's a piston or turbine, thankfully pilots all over the world continue to either build their own or keep the legacy aircraft around, which serves, you know, think about the Piper Cub.
Yeah.
Right? And how great that is. The my favorite plane from a looks perspective, which is the Beach Stagger Wing.
Yeah.
Even though I've never had an opportunity to get in one. And actually, you mentioned the 707. Isn't that what John Travolta flies?
John Qantas? Travolta. If you pull it up on Wikipedia, you'll be able to see John Travolta's Qantas-painted 707 jet as the display picture on the Wikipedia page.
It's pretty neat that he can afford to do that, and I love the fact that he and Harrison Ford and so many, we'll call them movie stars or famous people from the West Coast, really cherish aviation the way we do, and it's
absolutely
neat to see them take advantage of it. In
oh,
the way
definitely.
That they do.
You know, it was cool when I was for the airline that I worked at. I flew with another Chicago captain. We flew with the first flight from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, to Los Angeles. And the very first revenue flight for this new airplane, the Embraer 190, for the airline that we flew for. We flew it all the way out to L.A. and we landed on runway 25 left out there, and the FBO was kind of on the south side of the airport. So 25 left is the southernmost runway at L.A., and as we landed and you look over just to the left, there was John Travolta's 707 parked at the FBO.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, it was awesome. I'm like, if we haven't arrived in L.A., I don't know where we had, you know, I don't know what is.
Yeah, no, that's cool. And
yeah.
I think it's also cool that you remember, you talk to it like it's your first solo.
Yeah, it was a great flight. I just remember sitting there, you know, that I guess for all intents and purposes, kind of a mini transcontinental flight, Midwest to the West Coast, and I just remember sitting up there and really enjoying that.
Did you
flight.
Get a certificate for that?
No, negative.
So you get a certificate for killing a bird, but nothing for making the first Embraer 190 flight all the way to L.A.?
Well, that was a... I got paid for it, I guess.
Yeah, well, that's better than a piece of paper, I guess.
Right. The paper had some type of value.
That's right. Yeah, you got paper in each case.
Yeah, right.
One you could spend, one you couldn't. I'll take the former.
Absolutely. Well, how about this day? I was going to say December. Can you believe it?
No.
It feels like December out here in Chicago.
Yeah,
but
we've got a pretty chilly day. I had to wear a coat for maybe the second time this year.
Absolutely. But in October 28th, 2012, did you do anything with aviation?
Today?
Yeah.
Yeah, I cleaned up the clubhouse. But no, yeah, if you mean this past week. Is that okay if
Yeah, you can bring it up in the last week. Yeah, that's
so
fine.
Yesterday, I love it when we, as a community, do flyouts and stuff. So it was real neat that we took three planes in our Leading Edge Flying Club.
Nice job on kind of heading that up.
Yeah. Oh, no, I think you were the one that mentioned it. You said we should do it, and then, of course, we're always looking for a reason to fly. So we grabbed three of our airplanes and headed up half an hour up the toward Wisconsin, to Janesville, Wisconsin. And
did you know our group had a nickname?
Our group did? No.
Yeah, the Janesville Cavalry.
No.
Yeah.
So we change it? Like we go to Madison or Lone Rock or Sheboygan, we're going to change it each time?
Yeah, absolutely.
But always the Cavalry.
Well, maybe not the Cavalry, but we'll have to come something that's, I don't know, we'll have to come up with something that's pretty slick.
Is that a 442 or a 421 that just pulled
did
up?
Did your pilot ADD just get the
yeah,
best of you?
Yeah, it did. It's kind of like that, I don't know, did you ever see the cartoon Up?
No.
They have this dog with a translator around its neck. It's a cartoon. And he's talking, and then you hear him say, you know, so we should do this. Squirrel! And he just, every time he saw a squirrel, all of a sudden he'd say it. So I just saw an airplane taxi by. It looks like a 414. It's,
I got to call that a 421.
Are you really?
I am.
It's dark out. You have young eyes. It's I don't see the engines. What are the, with the little hump in the cowl.
Yeah.
What is that? The
geared engines?
Geared engines.
Yeah,
thank
right.
you. That all of a sudden escaped me.
Oh, that's all right.
Anyway,
but
neither here nor there. So we did the flyout yesterday in Janesville, three planes, and I just had a blast.
It was a riot. I think it was, you know, that brought up a good community, you know, a pilot community, just a group of people that normally wouldn't have, I guess, reached out to each other to sit down, you know, or just hop in an airplane and go to breakfast together. I thought it was great.
Yeah, no, it was, and it was fun to see you in the sky, Earl. Did you posted something to sparkreel.com,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
In the flying subgroup.
Yeah, definitely. So if you want to see a nice landing from the GoPro Hero cameras, go to sparkreel.com, look up the flying group, and you'll see some nice video footage of Mr. Lubaka.
So what did you do this week before we get on to more important topics like our special guest tonight?
Well, anyway, I felt really good about a lot of the flying lessons that I partook in this week. I was able to go up on Tuesday night here in Chicago with an instrument student of mine, and we flew to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and Racine. And the weather out there had RVRs of 1,000 feet, so less than an eighth mile visibility, vertical visibility, ceilings of 100 feet, and we just shot practice approaches and did real live mist approaches. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I know from remembering my instrument training, you know, I'll take the foggles off and say, okay, you got the runway, or you do a mist. It's so much more, not only real, but more fun to be in the environment and do a real mist approach because you have to, or catch it at minimums. That, to me, is so exciting about the instrument rating, besides being safe and opening the utility of the
right.
airplane.
Absolutely. No, I think it was pretty neat. It was a great learning experience. It was a great learning experience for the student and me as an instructor. And, you know, how often do you get to shoot real live mist approaches?
Yeah.
It's really not that often when you think about it.
Right, right.
Only a couple days out of the year.
Which I guess ultimately is a good thing, but here when you're trying to build proficiency, or in this case, earn a rating, to be in it just is an invaluable experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that was probably the most memorable thing for me in aviation.
We also did something else actually a little bit earlier in the week.
What did we do? Did we fly the Sky Arrow again?
Well, no. We actually had a pleasure to talk to somebody.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we sure did. It was really neat. We were able to sit down with Mr. Daryl Kimball. He's the author of a brand new book.
Yeah, called Catch the Sky, The Adventures and Misadventures of a Police Helicopter Pilot.
Yeah. And I think that was absolutely, we had a great conversation with him.
We did. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, I have to admit, what I went in with and what I came out with were two different things in terms
definitely.
Of expectations. And you and I have talked a lot over the last few months about the opportunities and the positive things going on in aviation and general aviation, and the things that offer us different pathways to success.
Yeah, definitely.
Right? And so I left this conversation with Daryl, thinking, wow, here's one we really hadn't talked about, and I think this will be really valuable for our listeners, especially young listeners that are looking for opportunities.
Yeah, definitely.
And how to get into aviation, and I think just very interesting for those of us that aren't so young.
Right. You know, one thing that was really interesting that I pulled out of this is that, you know, and we'll get, you'll hear Daryl talk about this, but maybe the stability of the career of being a law enforcement helicopter pilot. You know, there's a lot of turmoil in, you know, private aviation companies, and, mm-hmm. you know, job stability isn't necessarily, I wouldn't say the most secure, but, you know, Daryl paints a great picture, and another thing that I really liked is his perseverance. And,
yeah.
you know, I think we can all, that's something that all of us can relate with, working hard to achieve our dreams, and it's just really, really neat to hear.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is the book does a lot to talk about things that went on in his daily life over many years and the type of missions that he got to fly, or even before he was in the helicopter missions that presented themselves as part of the San Diego County Sheriff's Department. But as a pilot, I was thinking about, you know, how he get prepared to take the test, right? This wasn't, well, as they'll hear, wasn't anything he really had anticipated in terms of a long-range plan. And then the maneuvers, forget about the pursuits and things
yeah,
like
right.
that. The maneuvers they have to do at night and in next to ridges and hills, it's just not your standard flying to a asphalt or a concrete runway and get out and drop off some passengers. I thought that, wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, no, it was really cool. And, it, you know, I think Daryl paints a really great picture on all of that. And we were able to sit down with him earlier this, or well, at least talk to him over the phone earlier this week.
Well, we were sitting down, and I imagine he was too, so we could go.
I guess in all technical terms, the technical answer was yes, we did sit down with him, and we just had a great conversation. And
so maybe we should take a listen then.
Absolutely. So this is Daryl our conversation with Daryl Kimball, the author of Catch the Sky. And while this is playing, we're going to send out some tweets and links to his book.
Perfect.
For Amazon.
Which you can get from Amazon and yeah. on Kindle and such. So
Absolutely. So I hope you enjoy our conversation and get as much out of it as we do. And I think you'll really like it.
Yeah, you know, well, I was writing the my blog online, policehelicopterpilot.com, and I actually showed up to work one day. I've been doing that for about 4 years, and I showed up to work one day about 18 months ago, and I had an email from some guy named Alan Duffin out of L.A., who was a writer, and who proposed that we do write a book together. And not only did he just send me an email to you know, propose that we write a book, but he had already had a mock cover completely made up with my name on the front of it. So, and some picture, some helicopter picture he had snagged off the internet. So he was pretty convincing, and you know, I didn't really have to think much about it. You know, I really enjoyed writing about aviation. And on my website, I tend to not write about myself so much because I figured that would at some point kind of bore people, I guess, if it was all about me. But this was really an opportunity to kind of tell my story and to really tell a lot of stories that I would not talk about on my site, per se. And so I went home that day, and it was either that day or the next day, I started writing and cranked out my first 20-page document and sent it off to him. So,
wow.
So that's how I got started doing this, or that's how the book got started, basically.
That's pretty neat. So it was kind of discovered, you know, you were discovered off of through a blog. And
no, oh, absolutely I was. In fact, He you know, Alan even mentioned that he was researching his next book project. He's written a couple books, and Alan's an Air Force veteran, and his other books, one is I believe it's called the 12 O'Clock High Logbook Behind the Scenes, something like that.
Yeah.
And the other, you know, was about police women. And so this is, I would imagine for him was kind of a natural fit where he was able to write about, both, you know, law enforcement and aviation. So, yeah, that's how it came about.
Yeah, excellent. So because it came from your blog, you know, how did you start or get the idea of to start a blog? I think, you know, Mark and I, you know, we each run a blog, as well as a lot of our listeners, actually a couple
right.
of shows ago, we, you know, there's a lot of aviation blogs out there, and it's kind of a you know, it's pretty fun to write about stuff and share your stories and all that. So how did you get the idea to come up with your own blog, you know, to talk about police helicopter flying?
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, probably about 4 or 5 years ago, like a lot of people, I was sitting around thinking, you know, that, hey, this blogging sounds like a pretty good idea. It sounds like it would be fun. You know, I've been writing crime reports for 20 years. I figured I could do it. And I was actually researching different blog topics. And, you know, I don't even know what prompted me, but I just Googled the phrase police helicopter pilot. And by that time, I had my commercial helicopter license for about a year. But I Googled that phrase, and one of the pages that came up was pretty negative, kind of towards police, law enforcement, aviation. You know, it essentially said, you know, made the reference that police pilots were dangerous and poorly trained, and that kind of stuck with me, and I kind of kept coming back to that, and you know, I knew different than that, I knew better. And then there was, you know, I contemplated this for a few weeks and still researching topics. And then there was a flight school that, a helicopter flight school that had come into the same airport where we fly out of in El Cajon, Gillespie Field. And, they were a very large school. They were very much a scam, and it was pretty evident to a lot of people. Basically, their students were paying for flight time and they weren't getting it, things like that. And eventually the school did fold. But what happened was I was going to work one morning and I heard a radio commercial by that school about you know, the mass shortage of police helicopter pilots that's on the horizon, and you know, come train with us and we'll find you a job, you know, being a police helicopter pilot. And the thing was, is I knew how to become a police helicopter pilot. I had done it, and it really was not a lot of information on it out there. And so kind of those two things together and a few other things, I had a couple stories that I thought were really good stories I could tell on the internet, on the website. So that caused me to launch my blog and start writing. I think that was in February of 2008.
Oh, excellent. So that's really nice. And you still maintain your blog right now, correct?
I do. You know, unfortunately, like a lot of people, I think, I don't get as much time to work on it as I would like to. I still work a full-time job.
Definitely.
And you know, have a family. Excuse me. And I love nothing more than sitting here and writing on it. I just don't get the time to do it as much as I do. But I definitely still maintain it, yes.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I think that the one thing that's pretty inspirational about this, in my, you know, in my opinion, is that, hey, a lot, you know, you're a full-time police officer as well as, you know, as and you were a helicopter pilot, and you have a family and all that, and then you wrote this book, and there's a lot of work that goes into that, you know, and we kind of, Mark and I experienced that with the show, you know, just this aviation radio show, you know,
right.
we're full-time pilots to start with, and you know, as a hobby, I mean, there's a lot of work. And
speak for yourself.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I'm more of a weekend guy, but have a full time endeavors, you know, on Monday through Friday.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's cool that, you know, that to hear, it takes a lot of passion to follow that through. So, you know, kudos to you.
It was a lot of busy weekends, let me tell you.
Yeah, definitely.
for about a year and a half, and a lot of editing.
Yeah, definitely. So a year and a half to write. Wow. That's great. That's a pretty neat project.
Well, you know, one thing that interested me and enjoyed reading the book, just the fact that there was a connection between aviation and law enforcement. And I was talking to Al about this. We are involved actively in a relatively small club. We have 70 to 80 members, and at least four of them are police officers, and one of them used to fly for the major airline as well. And I started to ask, is this a coincidence or what is the connection between people that have a dream and a passion for law enforcement and a dream and a passion for aviation? Do you have any thoughts on that?
You know, I think probably it's just the same type of personality that is attracted to law enforcement is also attracted to aviation, and we certainly see that, you know, within our department and other police departments. You know, I can tell you this, that really passive people don't really make good police officers, and my guess is they probably don't make very good pilots, although I wouldn't say that across the board necessarily, but particularly in a police aviation unit, we don't have people in there with passive personalities. Everybody pretty much has a very strong personality. They like adventure. They like excitement to a certain extent. But I think even further than that, you know, if you look at both of these, you know, what somebody's doing both as a law enforcement officer and as a pilot is you're really managing risk, you know, big time. You know, that's what a cop does his entire day is, you know, besides obviously he's responding to calls and investigating crimes and things like that, but he's managing risk, his own risk. And I think as a pilot, or it goes right over into aviation. I mean, you know, we all know that as a pilot, you know, when you're the biggest things you do is manage risk. And so that, I think there's a lot of things that dovetail them together. And I think it's kind of a natural fit that somebody that is attracted to law enforcement as a career would also be attracted to aviation. Now, again, that's not across the board because I work with a lot of people that are afraid to fly. You know, they remember that no die, no fly club. But I think there's a connection there.
Absolutely. It's interesting. I was surprised when I started flying professionally as an airline pilot. There are a lot of captains that I flew with that were former police officers, and it's kind of now that you've brought up that point, I never really looked at the aspect of, hey, you know, being a pilot in command and a police officer, a law enforcement agent, you know, there's a lot of the same qualities out there. You got to be quick on your feet, make, you know, definitive decisions and execute them, manage the risk, like you were saying. And that's pretty neat to, you know, think about that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that goes together there as far as, like I said, managing the risk and that sort of thing.
And you mentioned about reading the blog about, you know, the law enforcement hires from within. Don't be a helicopter pilot for law enforcement. You know, you mentioned in the book that you had two passions, two dreams. One was, of course, getting out of Oklahoma at the time, although it sounds like you miss it very much. But the dream of law enforcement and the dream of flying, and yet the path to the flying was not a short time period from when you started to when you actually got into, is it pronounced Astria or Astria?
Astria. Uh-huh.
Astria,
yes,
Astria, the aerial support to regional enforcement agencies. So with that kind of passion and, you know, you want to, it was over 15 years if I got my timeline right. How do you keep motivated over that long period of time to achieve a goal of yours?
Well, you know, for me, it was, you're very close there. I did spend about 15 years in patrol. And, you know, when I was younger, even as a kid, I was involved in Civil Air Patrol there in Muskogee, Oklahoma. And so I had been around airplanes. I certainly, you know, loved them, kind of had a passion for them, was very interested and excited about them, got a few plane rides and things. But, you know, once I got on the department and moving through the department, I was kind of a very practical person, and I always read the news, and I thought, well, yeah, that flying thing is, looks like it would be fun, but it must be dangerous. And I wasn't really afraid to do it. In fact, I had a brother that was in the Navy here in San Diego. That's kind of how I ended up out here. And he, when I was a young deputy, he went and got his private pilot's license, and I did some flights with him. We flew over to Palm Springs one summer, and we did an overnight trip to Las Vegas, and I had a lot of fun, but there was still this practical side of me said, well, it must be dangerous. And then over the years, it just seemed to change. You know, and plus it seemed to be kind of expensive and that sort of thing. But now what happened with me is one day I'd been out on patrol for about 10 or 12 years, and I picked up an aviation magazine. In fact, it was an AOPA magazine that a local farmer here had sitting on his counter.
Nice.
And I picked it up, and it just kind of hit me. It's like, wow, this really is what I want to do now. And of course, I, you know, started buying the magazines and kit plane and everything. But we'd always had our aviation unit, our helicopter unit. And a couple other things happened that things started to line up, and I knew some of the guys in the unit, and I started talking to a couple of them. And that's when it really hit me. So for me, it was kind of a 5-year goal once I really latched onto it and said, you know, this is what I want to do. It was a 5-year goal to work and get into the unit for me.
Right, and also, and not to give everyone all the aspects of the book, but I do remember reading that there was a little delay in terms of pulling your name from the interview list.
Yeah, well, you know, in life, so here's what happened. I'll put it out there. You know, my darling wife, you know, a lot of times, you know, men and women don't see this. They don't think alike, and they don't see the same things necessarily. And that doesn't mean one's right or wrong. But you know, we lived at that time. I patrolled and lived in this small, kind of a small community, but it's a very large beat in northern San Diego County, kind of a semi-rural area. But we have a lot of Indian. We have 5 Indian reservations. In fact, I think it's the most Indian reservations on any single police beat in the nation, for the most part. So it's a very diverse community. But she sort of had this kind of a Mayberry outlook, where, you know, I was the local sheriff, really the local deputy sheriff, one of several. But, you know, and our kids went to school here, and, you know, if something happened with the kids, I would be right here in my patrol car, you know. And you know, it's a very admirable way of looking at things, and I just didn't see it that way. I had been arresting drunks for 15 years, you know, and the last thing I wanted was another drunk in my back seat. And while I enjoyed working this station, Valley Center, for many, I really did immensely enjoy it. But when you know, I had this new dream now and this new goal, and we definitely saw it different on that. And there was the one time that, yeah, I kind of, you know, agreed to see things her way, and so I had pulled my name off the list, and, you know, it that delayed me about 2 more years getting into the unit. But, you know, that's life. You know, things don't always work out exactly when we want. But, you know, but and the other part of that was, over time it changed. You know, the kids got older. You know, I wouldn't necessarily say she came around to my way of thinking, but, you know, a couple years later, it really wasn't as much of an issue, you know. And so when another position came open and I interviewed, you know, it just wasn't as big a deal. And I was able to go down there and you know, realize my dream at that time of flying helicopters.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. Well, something that kind of resonates with me in that is, you know, your perseverance in you know, achieving that dream. And of course, there's obstacles. You know, as soon as you lay out the plan, you know, or come up with the thought, you know, and a way to get to that dream, it's usually obsolete, right? So, you know, your goals are always changing, and you know, pathways to get there as well. And I think that's pretty. That's a neat demonstration of perseverance in aviation, of, you know, adapting and to achieve your goals and all that. And what do you think your goal? What was their first goal? Do you think it was more of an aviation goal, or was it a law enforcement goal? You know, to fly helicopters in the unit, or, you know, basically it's kind of a, what came first, the chicken or the egg kind of question?
Yeah, you know, for me, it's a great question. And actually, you might be surprised by my answer. You know, I ended up in California as a 21-year-old. Actually, I turned 21 out here. My brother was in the Navy. I was living with him. And I won't say I didn't have a direction. I definitely had, you know, some dreams and goals. And I was really looking more towards the military, but I had been, you know, National Guard, which they considered prior service. So when I would call up the Air Force, for example, and they said, well, yeah, come right on in. You can be a truck driver, what I was already doing. It's like, I don't want to do that, you know.
Yeah.
So I won't say I was, you know, I had a local job. I was working in a cabinet shop. But, you know, law enforcement was not a goal I'd had my whole life. It was not something I'd ever even been interested in my growing up, in fact. And, in fact, I used to see cops on the street in Muskogee, Oklahoma, and, you know, uniformed patrol guys, and I used to tell myself as a kid, wow, that seems like a hard job. I would never do that, you know. So, but that's kind of human nature. So here I was working and kind of trying to find my way, and my sister-in-law at that time came to me and goes, well, why don't you go apply for the sheriff's department? And, you know, the sheriff's department patrolled the little town we lived in, Imperial Beach, and, you know, but I didn't know anything else about him. I just didn't. And, you know, my first thought was, well, don't you have to be, I don't know, like 25 or something, and don't you need a college degree or something like that? I don't have any of that. And she says, nope, I'm pretty sure all you need to be is 21 and a high school diploma. And, of course, she was right, and I went down and stood in line with 300 other people and took a test. I wasn't feeling very confident about that, you know, but so that's kind of how I fell into it. But it's, you know, for some people, for some young people, it probably is, you know, a goal for many years if they know what they're going to do. And you know, but for me, it was not that way. I kind of fell into it. But, you know, once I saw it as an opportunity and something that was within reach, then I became very interested in it. And, you know, it's been a very good career for me. There's not too many careers out there that somebody without a college degree can make the money that, you know, the decent amount of money that I make. And so it's a good career, and it's been very good to me.
And the other good news is they paid for your flight training.
Yes, they did. And you know, it's as far as I know, I don't know if there's only two places in the country or almost in the world that you can get your helicopter flight training paid for, and that's either in the military or a large police or sheriff's department that pays for your training. So yes, they spend quite a bit of money training me up, as we do all of our pilots.
Yeah, and I found it interesting that when you went to the training, you don't do a beat or anything, right? You just go away until you get your private and commercial license. You don't even think about police work during that time. Is that correct?
That's correct. You know, in our unit, they historically they've done it both ways. They have trained. We have our own, flight instructors within the unit, of course. And they, over the years, they have trained some people completely within the unit. But now we had a fatal crash in '97, and it was the NTSB ruled it was due to pilot disorientation. It was nighttime. That was before we flew on night vision goggles. But one of the things that came out of that was a recommendation that we get more outside training. And, so that if you have bad habits, they're not continually reteaching them inside the unit. And so plus they found out, well, it's cheaper to break somebody else's helicopter than your own, your own turbine helicopter. So they typically a lot of times will start us off in the unit. I had 24 hours in the unit in MD-500 turbine helicopters before I went to Civic helicopters over at Palomar Airport in Carlsbad. So I could start it, I could land and take off, but I couldn't do any of it very pretty, And so
now you sound like me.
when they send us to school, our job is to not come back until you have a commercial helicopter license. And that sounds like a lot of fun, and trust me, it was. But let me tell you, the pressure is on because, you still, for a kid like me, I was a C student out of this little town of Oklahoma, that never thought I was smart enough to be a pilot, or anything like that. And I had never seen a deputy or heard of a deputy sheriff going up to this flight training and failing out. And I darn sure wasn't going to be the first one. So let me tell you, even though, that was my only job, I would show up at the airport every day for about 2.5 months roughly. Generally would do 2 flights a day and of course some classroom training between that time, but I can tell you I spent hours and hours and hours and many weekends locked in my closet at home studying, so the county got their money's worth out of it,
Yeah, absolutely. Still, it's a very cool story, and I think if I again read it right, something like 8 days to solo. So it wasn't a long, elongated path. I mean, it was very compressed, and you had to keep up on it, and obviously you did.
Yeah, and you're working, the brain is working both sides here. I mean, you're physically trying to learn how to fly the helicopter, which is, I will say, learning to hover was one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life. But then, looking back, you go, wow, why was it so hard? It's one of those things like teaching a little kid to ride a bike. But, yeah. And then you have the classroom part of it, studying and learning all the airspace and such, as you know. So yeah, you had both sides of the equation, and it was pretty compressed. And like I said, it was a lot of pressure. But man, one of the happiest days of my life was the day I got my commercial helicopter.
Oh,
license.
Wow!
That's and, knew that, man, I can take a mental break for at least a few days.
Right. No, that's such a great feeling once you achieve that. And, that's a massive milestone in, your pathway to achieving your dream. So that must have been a fantastic day.
Oh, absolutely it was. Absolutely.
So you said the hovering was the most challenging thing to learn. What was your favorite thing to learn? Maybe the same answer. I don't know.
With helicopters, here's what I found out. I don't fly fixed wing. I do want to get my fixed wing license one day, but at this point I don't have it, so I've only got about 1 hour of actually flying a fixed wing. But anyway, one thing I found out with helicopters, you learn to hover. That is your first big breakthrough, and it is a huge mental breakthrough, and it's a huge uplifting moment, so to speak, so I can really do this. I mean, it's a big shot in the arm, but what I also found out was you would think that from that point on everything would be easy about flying a helicopter. Oh, heck no, doing approaches, learning approaches in a helicopter was, to me, almost as difficult as learning to hover, but not quite, because, you're managing that power from altitude, and you're coming down, and you're managing that tail rotor and power, and all the way to the ground, and then you're coming into a hover, and then it is just, I can't tell you how many, you know, or how many times around the pattern, or, you know, generally we're training in a open field someplace, but just how many times you go around and you try it over and over, and I mean, just it seemed like hundreds of times. Maybe it wasn't quite that many. But, you know, autos were fun. You know, initially autos were also very difficult to learn and a little scary initially. But over time, doing autos becomes very fun.
So,
and it really is like that e-ticket ride at Disneyland, you know. So I would say autos is kind of a fun thing once you learn them.
Yeah, so for a fixed wing guy, like is an auto a engine out procedure?
Yes, it is, exactly. Yeah. And generally the way we train that is you have two types. You have what they call the auto recovery, and you have a full touchdown. And you know, if you're in a training helicopter, for example, in flight school, even in flight school, a lot of times you do the auto recoveries. But definitely when the factory pilot comes out and gives us emergency training, you roll that throttle off, and you don't roll it back on until your skids are on the ground, and you do
wow.
that repeatedly. So autos are they work great. You know, of course, things can still go wrong. But yeah, that's an engine-out procedure for helicopters.
I was more nervous, I guess, as showing my empathy when I read about things, I guess, called tow-ins or one-skid landings or along a mountain ridge or flying at night with wires around. I thought, oh, my God, how do you manage that kind of risk?
You know, that's a big question. You know, the tow-ins and one-skids, tow-ins actually get pretty simple. Because if you have, out here we have a lot of hills and mountains in California.
Right.
And you know, if you can't find a place to put both skids down flat, you'll do a tow-in much of the time. And specifically, the MD-500 helicopter is very useful for this because you know the skids tend to stick out in front a little bit, and you have it's a five bladed rotor disc, and so it's a little bit shorter, and so you can really get into some tight spots. But you come in and, you know, you just get in a good hover and you start, you know, creeping up to your hillside. You pick out a good spot and you get pretty good eventually at looking at, you know, the incline and, you know, just picking out a good spot and say, yeah, I can do a tow in there easily. And
nice.
So you essentially just creep right up to the hillside and you watch the tips of your rotors. And you generally will kind of stick your left skid into the hillside gently. And then you just, you know, manipulate the tail rotor a little bit, bring the front of that right skid around. And when it touches, you're just kind of locked in there, and you can set there. A tow-in is a pretty comfortable maneuver now, and you can set there for 5 minutes in a tow-in if you wanted to, and you're not really working that hard. Now one skids, not so much. One skids are definitely the harder one to learn, and it's, you know, the way you do it, a lot of times you're doing it on the opposite side of the helicopter. The skid that you can't even see, because that's where your observer is going to get on and off the helicopter. And so you'll come in again in a nice, slow hover, and you creep up, you find your rock. It's generally almost always on a rock out here, although it can be on an incline. But, you find your rock, and every single rock is different.
yeah,
the flatter,
right.
the better. But, and there is a place kind of on your skid that's optimal for setting it down, where the weight of the helicopter is kind of balanced front and back, but you know, you can't see that right skid, so you're just, you know, every, like I said, everyone's different, but you're coming in and you're just gauging, and you're just creeping down. Now your observer can talk you down and say, okay, you got, you know, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and you wait until that thing contacts, and then what you do is you try to just, you drop the collective ever so slightly to put a little bit of weight on that skid, and we call it locking it in. And if you get that one skid locked in and you have just a little bit of weight on the skid, and of course the helicopter's obviously still flying, you can get pretty good at those, but those were pretty tough to learn. And you know, I had a few hairy situations trying to learn those. You know, the helicopter starts getting squirrely, and, you know, that's not something you want to happen when you've got one skid on a rock. But
yeah.
Yeah, that somehow you made it sound easy, but I'm not buying it.
Well, initially it is not very easy, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, it sounds like an absolute riot. I kind of want to go, you know, start my helicopter lessons right now.
Yeah, they'll teach you that on day one.
Yeah,
I'm
right.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. No, that sounds like a lot of fun, seriously. So that's
it. It is. It's a blast.
And so that even then kind of leads us to the types of missions you fly. You know, we can all imagine, I guess, pursuits and all that, but as a law enforcement helicopter pilot, especially out there in San Diego, what type of missions do you fly and the challenges associated with those?
Well, you know, we do, just like you said, a lot of the, you know, respond to violent crimes, crimes occurring now, car chases. You know, it's surprising. We really don't get overactive chases as much as people might think. It's kind of amazing how you always tend to show up about 20 seconds after they bailed out of the car, you know, and they're running in all directions. It really just happens over and over again. But, you know, so we do respond to all those. We actually respond to a lot of missing person calls, even in the city, you know, a lot of elderly people that are missing, Alzheimer's patients, things like that. And, you know, we use our PA on the helicopter a lot to find those people when you get over a community and you start PA-ing that we're looking for, you know, an elderly, you know, Alzheimer's patient. You put out a quick description.
Wow.
You can generally find those people pretty quick, and you save the officers on the ground a lot of time. But we do, you know, in our county here, it's, I think we're about a little over 4,000 square miles. We have the largest state park in the state in San Diego County, the Anzabrego Desert State Park. We have a lot of desert and a lot of backcountry and a lot of, although our mountains aren't as high as some of the other mountains in the state, we have still have a lot of rugged mountain terrain. And we also have the border, so we have a lot of, you know, migrants coming over the border. A lot of them, unfortunately, pass away out in the backcountry, you know, due to either heat or cold, both.
Yeah.
Both extremes. So we end up doing quite a number of rescues in the backcountry, and they're a lot of fun. You know, there's a saying that nobody likes cops, but everybody loves firemen, you know, because firemen never have to arrest people. So when we go out and rescue people, it's tough. It's kind of like being a fireman. You know, they just love you. And it really, to be able to use the helicopter and go out, and I can tell you, I have picked up migrants off of mountaintops that thank me for saving their life, and that
wow.
is a great feeling. It's a good thing, you know. It's a great thing to be able to take your flying skills and use it for good like that. You know, we had another search that comes to mind was a hearing impaired lady out in the Anzabrego Desert State Park that went hiking on a pretty hot day. It was 112 degrees. And she took water, but she made a wrong turn coming back to her car. Got out further into the desert, was lost, and her only communication was her cell phone. She texted her mother in Northern California, but then her battery died, you know, so, or she had turned it off because we tried, you know, recontacting her. So all we had was a hearing impaired lady, you know, that was near a certain trail in the desert. It was a 2.5 hour search in 112 degree heat, and with the help, we had a state park fixed wing airplane above us. And then we had some rangers on the ground that eventually picked up her track. So with everybody working together, we did eventually find her. My partner, the pilot at the time, spotted her first. But we, so things, rescues like that are very, they're very fulfilling. They're, like I said, they're a lot of fun, we enjoy doing that type of work a lot.
That's actually pretty neat to hear that, because there's a, you know, you're using the helicopter as a tool. You know, you're taking your passion, such as law enforcement and aviation, and it's almost your paintbrush for doing some, you know, some good, you know, really good work. And that's gotta be extremely rewarding, from that standpoint of just, hey, we're taking the highest and best use of this machine right now, and your piloting abilities, and, you know, really making an impact on somebody's life.
Exactly, and you know, it's a great feeling to do that. And you know, the other thing too, and I don't want to gloss over, is, you know, not just catching bad guys, because obviously I've been doing that my whole career. You know, that's what cops do generally. But you know, we're really there to support the police officers and the deputies on the ground. And I can tell you, I've been on the ground. I've been in fights in the dark, in the middle of a field, in the middle of the night, by
wow.
myself. And I'm telling you, when the helicopter shows up, it's a good feeling. And so, we're supporting the guys on the ground. We're there to make their job easier if we can. But I can also tell you, there are a lot of violent criminals that are taken off the street in this country every single day because of the police helicopter. That takes nothing away from the guys on the ground. They do most of the hard work. But it's a tool, and it's a great tool, and if they're at the right place at the right time, then you know, you can take people, you know, violent criminals off the street that, either would not be taken off that day or would not be caught at all for that crime. So it is a great tool, and those things are fulfilling as well. You know, it's great to be there, you know, and be in the right spot at the right time, and you know, some guy that's been terrorizing people and committing violent crimes, and he goes to jail because you were overhead in your helicopter. That's also a pretty cool feeling.
Yeah, definitely.
So, you know, one of the things, and we talked a little bit about managing risk and maybe the family's concern for you being in the sky, I would think the people you're supporting on the ground are facing the dangers of, you know, weapons, things like that, where there could be some real significant danger. Do you feel that in the air, that maybe someone's going to point a gun toward the sky? Has that ever happened?
It certainly happened in airborne law enforcement. Years ago, we had one helicopter hit here in San Diego County, one of our helicopters, in the tail rotor with a round. There's been a few rounds, you know, plinked off at helicopters. It's generally not it's generally not very successful, thankfully. But you know, kind of going back to your original question, I really, for the most part, felt safer in the air in my helicopter than I did on the ground. And that wasn't all from, you know, violent crimes, but, you know, even just driving, the area I worked out here is, again, it's kind of a semi-rural area, a lot of windy two-lane roads. And, you know, I worried about head-on collisions. I really did.
Wow.
And I actually, you know, and of course every traffic stop, any traffic stop can go bad, even the most, but what you think might be the most simplest benign traffic stop, you know, it can turn deadly. So while the air unit has different risk, most often I felt safer in the air, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I would think so. I just, based on listening, I think I would as well.
Yeah, definitely. How quickly could your roles, when you're airborne and you're, let's say you're providing you're doing a search and rescue mission, how quickly can your roles change being in pursuit of somebody or something like that? Did that happen very often where your roles, you know, kind of turn on a dime like that?
Oh yeah. Really, it's almost instantaneous because now, see, we have in our county, we now have some medium lift Bell, you know, Huey helicopters that are outfitted with hoist. But we've only had them in this county since for about 7 years now, since the 03 wildfires. It took a couple years to bring them in. But prior to that, the San Diego Sheriff's Astor unit and their MD-500 helicopters was really the only rescue helicopter in the entire county, and they had been doing rescues since the early 70s. Well, even back in their Bell 47s, they were doing rescues. Now, Coast Guard would occasionally do the rescue that when it required a hoist, but there was no law enforcement or fire rescue helicopter in San Diego County for almost 30 years, except for the Sheriff's Department and their MD-500 helicopters. But for us, you know, we carry a certain amount of rescue, well, not really rescue gear, survival gear in the back. But so many of the rescues, probably I would say about 80% of the ones that we do throughout the county can be done in the little helicopter. And it's generally somebody that's overheated. It's somebody that's, you know, has broken a leg or sprained an ankle or simply has, you know, got into a position they can't get out of or lost, all of those things. And the vast majority of them can be done in a small helicopter. Now, some of them are actually safer now that we have the larger helicopters. But for us to transition from, let's say, we could be on a patrol call 1 minute, and the very next call is, a rescue call in the backcountry, then generally we're ready to go already. And the only thing we do at that time is look at our fuel and manage our fuel and start, you know, planning, okay, do we land here? Let's top off now and that sort of thing. Or do we have enough to head out there right now? So that's really the only transition, is just making sure that you have, if it's getting closer to dark and you don't have your night vision goggles, you might head back to the base first, refuel, you know, get your night vision goggles in case you're out, as it turns dark, things like that. But otherwise it's a very quick transition.
Wow. I would imagine that it would be. How about like any interaction with fixed wing airplanes, law enforcement airplanes? Does your county have 172s or 182s or King Airs or whatnot that provide fixed wing support?
You know, in the past, our air unit has had fixed wings. At this point in time, we do not have any. I think what you would find around the country and what most people would find is that many large agencies will have one or two fixed-wing aircraft. And they use them for surveillance, and they use them primarily for, well, sometimes they'll fly the command around, the sheriff or the police, the police chief, that sort of thing. But a lot of times they use them for extradition, too. For example, San Diego PD does have a fixed-wing. I think it's probably a Cessna 205, and their pilots maintain currency in it. They are IFR rated in the fixed wing, and they like I said, I do know that they've been to Vegas a handful of times, you know, picking up prisoners, things like that. There's a kind of a move, I think, for some of the smaller agencies to go towards fixed wing. Fixed wing could be a very good platform for a patrol aircraft. You're just up a little bit higher, you know, generally,
right.
You know, 1,000 feet or more. There's obviously certain things that you can't do, but, you know, particularly for daytime and even nighttime with a FLIR camera, FLIR cameras are very powerful. In fact, it's almost preferred that you're up at about 800 or 1,000 to operate the FLIR at nighttime. So they can be a very good platform. It's just, you know, there's certain things, obviously, you're not going to be able to do in a fixed wing, though.
You know, you bring that up, Al, and one of our members who currently lives in L.A. is a member of the LAPD, and he's talked to us often about his desire to get into an aviation unit, and I thought he mentioned a King Air, so they might be one of those organizations that actually has a King Air for doing some of the things that you're talking about.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me one bit if LAPD or LA Sheriffs, one or both, had a King Air. I haven't really checked up on that, but yeah, an agency that large could get a lot of use out of one. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So as you look at this, what are some of the challenges that you think an organization like yours or around the country, what's the challenge in law enforcement aviation that everyone's facing today or some organizations are facing today?
Well, I think the biggest challenge without question are budgets. Over the last 4 years, we've seen 4 or 5 years really, there's been a number of units shut down. You know, mostly they're medium to small size units. The larger agencies such as our agency, although we came close to downsizing a couple years ago, they were able to kind of save us from that and restructure a little bit. But, most of the agencies that have had to shut down their air units are medium to smaller ones. Agencies like LAPD and LASO, fortunately they have the money to keep moving ahead with their air units. But, I would say that's probably a big challenge. And, you know, a lot of what I see around the country sometimes is really getting the public support sometimes is a challenge. You know, there was an agency in Kansas, I believe it was Wichita, that just seemed to not have any public support for their air support unit, and I think it eventually closed down. And some of that is financial. You know, the citizens probably not, wanting to see their tax money go to what they sometimes see as a toy. It's funny that on the West Coast, in the larger agencies, I rarely ever see a member of the public seriously question the aviation assets and what good they do. But sometimes it seems like in some of the smaller jurisdictions that the citizens will really question that. You know, they see it a lot of times, the helicopter is the sheriff's toy. I mean, I've seen that written, I can't tell you how many times. So I think those are some of the challenges. And one thing that's always been a little bit of a challenge in airborne law enforcement is proving the worth of the aircraft. It's hard. It's always hard to say, well, this is exactly, how many people we've arrested, because you assist on arrest, or this is exactly how many people would have escaped if we had not been there. You know, those things are, it's always been a little bit hard to quantify. But I think for most of the larger agencies, they would refuse. San Diego PD, I know the chief, I'm pretty sure, has been on record as saying, you're not cutting my air unit. You know, that's how important they see their air unit and how effective they are, particularly over crimes that are, occurring now. So I think those are some of the challenges.
Yeah, although I was kind of surprised to hear you mention, if indeed it's correct, Wichita. That's one city you would think that aviation, which is so important to it.
Yeah.
That everyone would say, without aviation, we probably don't have a town.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but of course there they were talking, I think, specifically about the police helicopter, that they were operating there. You know, more of the taxpayer funded, helicopters,
sure,
what they were looking
understand.
At.
Understand. And as we continue the conversation with Daryl Kimball, author of Catch the Sky, I guess after challenges, what about the future? What are the opportunities that we're not taking advantage of yet that's out there to leverage that wonderful tool that we've been talking about?
Well, you know, what I just something that I have seen over the years that I think would really dramatically change or could potentially, you know, change airborne law enforcement would be if there was a certified gyroplane that could be of use in airborne law enforcement. And in fact, you know, the gyroplanes, I mean, they preceded the helicopter. Most people, well, if you're in aviation, if you're a rotor head or a helicopter person, you probably read that before. But, you know, a gyroplane or gyrocopter is about, is very affordable to operate as compared to a helicopter. Obviously, it can't hover and it's not going to be doing rescues on mountaintops, but it would fill the role of a lot of what airborne law enforcement does. You know, orbiting a call, you know, you could fly low and slow like a helicopter, and you can operate it for, you hear everything from $50 an hour to maybe $150 an hour versus $500 to $700 to $800 for helicopters.
Wow.
Now, I was recently contacted by a guy from a company in New Zealand, who is working, who are working on what they hope to be a certified, for sale in the U.S. gyrocopter enclosed. And they're designed it specifically for law enforcement. Now, they don't even have a website up yet. I think they're holding back until they get further along in the process. But he contacted me recently and offered to provide some info on it. But you know, there's already a handful of agencies that are trying this because they're so cheap to operate. And there was an agency in the Midwest, I can't recall it at the moment, that right now is under a federal grant, a federal study actually, is using a gyrocopter for daytime patrol. But, you know, it doesn't even have a canopy on it. I mean, they're out there in the open wind, which is
wow.
Great. That's fine on a sunny day. But, you know, if it's not so sunny or so warm, you know, they're probably not going to be using it that much. But, you know, I would see something like that as really a lot more agencies would be inclined to have, I think, an air unit if they had a more affordable approach to it. You know, and then one other thing is the light sport category now. You know, we're seeing obviously more planes coming into the light sport category. We're seeing some agencies, a handful of them, start to migrate towards that. In fact, there's a sheriff's department here in Central or Northern California that recently gave up their helicopter and converted to a light sport, you know, fixed wing airplane for their patrol. So I think there's a couple areas where, you know, where there's some opportunities for agencies to get involved in airborne law enforcement that just won't be as costly as the ownership of a full helicopter.
Right. Although I don't know the cost, but I'm wondering now with all the UAVs, the unmanned aircraft that we're seeing in the news, if that isn't something that law enforcement will look to at some point.
It's, for me, the jury's kind of out on that. I think that they definitely, you know, because I sit here and I see all those reports and I read all those reports and I wonder to myself, you know, how could they ever completely replace a law enforcement crew? And I think it's great that companies are being innovative and are coming up with these products, you know, to basically sell to law enforcement and to public agencies. You know, and I think there's definitely probably a use for them, but I really think it's going to be a limited basis. I think it's going to be, over, let's say, a hostage situation or a SWAT call out. Even perhaps a burglary occurring now, but it's going to be, I think, very limited, very isolated. I just don't think you can take. Besides the airspace and FAA, issues that we all know about, to put an unmanned aircraft over a populated city, we're just nowhere near that yet. And in fact, I have a friend who works on unmanned aircraft, the type that we use in Afghanistan and such. And you have two versions. You have one version has no redundancy to it. So
yeah.
if the computer takes one reboot, that thing goes straight in. And
wow.
We're not going to have that overpopulated city for many, many years, I don't think. But there's room for them, I think, and definitely on a limited basis. And for some of the smaller agencies that can't afford a unit, you know, I think putting something like that up over a SWAT call out, you know, I definitely think there's a place for that. I just don't think any time in the future we're going to see it replace you know, helicopter, manned helicopter crews out on patrol. I just don't see that happening, really.
Right or wrong, I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, well, no, I think that brings up a good point that, hey, there's a, you know, it, that, one, you're a pilot, but also, you know, it's a law enforcement crew it's a flight crew and a law enforcement crew at the same time. And there's that element of, I guess, law enforcement swag or finesse that, you know, tips and tricks that you use to execute the mission, you know, that'd be pretty hard to replace when you're actually you're using an unmanned vehicle, you know, to complete the mission, you know. So
yeah, absolutely. And if you think about it, you know, I mean, even our drones and such, yes, they're looking through a camera, but now, you know, when you have a law enforcement crew up there, you have two brains and you have four eyeballs up there looking, and that's just, you know, with all their law enforcement experience. And you know, sometimes me and my partners together, you know, combined would have, you know, almost 40 years of law enforcement experience. You're just not going to replace that by looking through a camera.
Right, exactly. You know what, there's when at the beginning of this conversation, you talked about the drought of law enforcement pilots. When you first originally started doing your research, you were looking and seeing this big shortage of law enforcement pilots coming up. Do you still see that? Do you think that pending shortage still exists, or has it hit? You know, there's a just like with the airlines. You know, the airlines are going to be facing a big mandatory retirement, and they're forecasting a big pilot shortage. Does that exist within law enforcement still?
Well, actually, when I referred to that, that was a line that was being used by the flight school that had come into our airport that eventually went out of business because they were scamming people.
Oh, geez.
but so I don't see the shortage. However, I think if people look at it this way, and you know, and one of the reasons or one of the things I really you know, I think I took pride in writing this book is kind of laying out a pathway for young people, because I remember what it was like, you know, being just out of high school and not knowing what I was going to do with my life and not having a plan, really, or a path, and not knowing if I was going to be successful at anything. But so for young people now, particularly, you know, somebody that's, you know, 17, 18, 19, 20, you know, law enforcement aviation is always going to be there.
Right.
You know, people retire, people lose their medicals, you know, people get tired, believe it or not, of the air unit, and they move on. So they're, even in our own air unit, and we have about, in our unit here in San Diego, the sheriffs, we have about roughly 14 pilots. It depends on if you count the sergeants and that sort of thing. But even in a unit that size, you have turnover. You have, since I've been, you know, I promoted out of the unit, hope to return someday soon. But when I promoted out of the unit 2 years ago, since that time, we've had about five new people come in. Now, that's you know, but now you can also go 2 years without that much turnover, but we've had about five people come in. So those units are always going to be there. There will always be turnover. So for a young guy or young person, male or female, you know, 18 or 19, those jobs are still going to be there for them, you know, in another 10 years. They're going to be there. And so we haven't talked much about how you do that, but basically they're going to need to pick out a large agency that has a large a relatively large air unit, you know, three or four helicopters versus one, that has a long history of having the air unit. You know, you want an agency that's had an air unit for the last 30 years, and really hasn't shut it down, because you know that air unit's still going to be there in another 10 or 15 years. And they're going to have to come in as a sworn officer or sworn deputy and work their way towards that air unit, you know, every agency is different. There is no set time, but those are
right.
Competitive positions, typically, that you're going to have to interview for. And you know, most agencies will do a point system. You know, you get the points for how many years you've been on and different positions you've held and things like that. And so we recently, I used to say that in our unit that nobody made it in that unit in less than 10 years. Well, that's even changed in my own unit now, and we have a couple young guys in there that barely have I think just over 5 years on the department that have made it into the air unit.
Wow.
So those jobs will be there. So you know, not necessarily a shortage, but those jobs will always be there, and there'll always be turnover. So for the person that plans it now and that's their goal, they stand a very good chance of being able to realize their dream if that's exactly what they want to do.
And you mentioned the point system. Is there points given for having a fixed wing private pilot license?
You know, it's another excellent question, and this will dovetail into something else I think maybe some of your listeners, I'd kind of like to throw out there as an idea here in a minute. But every single agency is different, and I can't stress that enough. However, a fixed wing license will always help. First off, many large units do have a fixed wing, and so they're going to want you to have that anyway. Ours was that way for a time. We don't have fixed wings right now, so there's no push on our agency to either have one or to go get one. However, if you have one, that's still going to be a plus. Let me talk maybe just a minute. You know, there's a we see a lot of pilots, and I get emails from a lot of military pilots, helicopter pilots that want to come out and fly for police departments, and you know they want to fly. And many of them, the big question is, do I want to go onto a department and spend 4, 5, or even 10 years in patrol waiting for a position in the air unit? And that's very understandable for somebody that's, you know, that's been flying and they want to continue flying, you know, and they don't, you know, perhaps being a cop is not their thing. That's fine. But let's take a young person that's, say, you know, again, you know, 17 to 20, and they want to plan their career. And let's say that they've decided, I really want to be a police pilot. The airline is not for me. And so that's what I'm going to do. Well, if they come in and if they plan it right, particularly as a young person, you know, they're single, they don't have a family yet, that sort of thing. Law enforcement is very stable. In 27 years, my department has not laid off one single person. Okay,
wow.
Benefits are decent. Pay is very decent for without a college, you know, for somebody that doesn't have a college degree. So they can come in, you know, get stabilized, work a year or two, and start working on their fixed wing ratings, and just continue over time, you know, if they plan it right, working on their fixed wing ratings and getting their ratings, and you know, then they can start working on the side, you know, flying the skydivers and things like that. And let's say they, you know, because there's never a guarantee they're going to get an air unit. There's no guarantee for any of us. Let's say they never do. Well, they've still been able to have a very exciting, fun career, stable career. They've been able to experience aviation, build ratings, and I've known at least two individuals on our department, just our department, that have done exactly that over the years, built their ratings, built their time, and at least one of those, I haven't kept up with the other one, but at least one of those is now flying corporate aircraft, cross country. So that, you know, it's kind of a backup plan, I guess. You know, for that person that wants to come on and go for the air unit, but they're looking for some sort of a guarantee, which there isn't one, but that's kind of a backup plan maybe, that they know that, look, I can still be a pilot and maybe have the funds to go out and experience and enjoy that. So,
wow, well, that sounds like there's a lot of potential in that, and you know, I think that aviation, you know, is kind of a, I would say it's not a rough pathway, but, you know, there's other jobs that aren't as stable. But I think that, you know, what I really like is that, you know, that you pointed out is how stable this job could be and how much opportunity, you know, exists within it. And, you know, that's actually kind of refreshing to hear a little bit in an aviation environment. I've run into many professionals who've been, you know, flying fixed-winged airplanes and, you know, they kind of hop around, and they've worked for, you know, more than a handful of companies in their careers. So I think that there's something to be said about, you know, the stability of it as well, which is like I said, pretty refreshing.
You know, while we're on that kind of that topic, if I can throw out there, you know, it reminded me of one. I interviewed an FBI pilot. It's been a couple of years now, and I just did it for an article and had it up on my website, but. You know, if you think about it, again, a young person that's looking at this as a possible career, well, who's going to ever come to him and tell him, hey, did you know that the FBI owns over 80 airplanes?
Wow.
Nobody's going to come and tell him that.
Yeah, right.
So some of these jobs, him or her, some of these jobs, they're really not advertised, law enforcement jobs. You have to get into the agency. And so do you know how many pilots that are, it's going to take to operate 80 aircraft? My guess is at least, you know, it's going to take a few hundred. You know, with days off and vacations, you know, you're always so right in the FBI, there's the ability to get into airborne law enforcement. You're going to be flying different types of missions, mostly surveillance missions and probably a lot of transports. But the pilot that I interviewed that day, was just about to depart for the Middle East. You know, he was you know, that afternoon he was flying out to the Middle East. Now, he had been a police officer in Florida, had been in the air unit in Florida, and was able to transition over to the FBI. Now, the FBI, of course, has pretty stringent requirements. You know, they not only are they going to have to go out and get a college degree, but it's going to have to be in an area that the FBI wants it to be in, such as accounting, all those things. But every single pilot in the FBI is a sworn FBI agent that has graduated the FBI Academy in Quantico, Virginia. And so all of those jobs, you know, go to people that are working FBI agents. So, I mean, again, you know, there's, you know, a few hundred pilot jobs there that are never really going to be advertised to the public, as far as I know. They go to the people within the agency, and so there's a whole other you know, area there for young people to explore, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, as Al and I have been doing this radio show for multiple months now, we keep hearing about all the positives and all the opportunity that's out there, and you are echoing that in spite of what we read in the news about the doom and gloom. It just goes on to show how much opportunity and positives do exist in general aviation and beyond.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think so. I think there's definitely a lot of opportunities out there.
Yeah. You know, one thing that I really appreciate, and I think you orate it very nicely, is your passion and your positiveness towards the career. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of opportunity to be negative, and even when you were doing your first initial bits of research on it, it sounded like a lot of the feedback and, you know, that was coming back, it was negative, but I really appreciate the fact that, hey, you know what, you found a lot of positives in this, and it's provided a great living, a great story, and you know, you wrote a blog which turned into a book, and that's pretty cool when a pathway like that kind of takes you into maybe a realm that you didn't even think about when you first started.
Absolutely, and trust me, I feel very lucky. You know, that I don't want to say I fell into this. I kind of fell into law enforcement, but I didn't fall into the aviation part. It was something I worked very hard for. You know, but I think also just kind of another message for young people out there is that, you know, again, I was a C student out of high school. I never, you know, I've only had a few hours of college, you know, that I attended while I was a young deputy. You know, but if you work hard, if you set goals and you work towards them and you keep your nose clean and you stay out of trouble and you know, and one other thing I'd like to throw in there is that in police aviation units, particularly, and really any job, you'll see this in the airlines, I know, it has far more to do with your attitude and your personality and a positive attitude and being able to get along with others. Because I can tell you, there are a number of trained, commercially rated helicopter pilots all across this country in law enforcement air units that leave those units and sometimes are asked to leave because they cannot get along with other people in the unit. And
yeah.
I'm telling you, it happens.
Right.
So for young people, and there's kind of a natural tendency, I think, sometimes for people to sort of sell themselves short or think that everybody else is smarter than them. I'm telling you, you know, hard work and a good attitude is going to take them far further than somebody that's just got a lot of brains.
Yeah, right.
So, very important.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great demonstration of that. And, you know, your book outlines kind of all the hard work that does go into it. And I think that it's just...
And the patience.
Yeah, and the patience.
I would not have had the patience you had.
Yeah.
To be commended.
Yeah, no, seriously. And it's,
well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's wonderful.
And, you know, the book goes on, and you mentioned it already, that you were promoted into a role that's away from the aviation unit. After having a goal like that, having a dream and achieving it, I got the sense that while you would love to be back with it, that you've said, hey, I've moved on to a new role and I'm comfortable with it. And I'm sitting here thinking, how can anyone get away from aviation?
Yeah.
You know, I'm bitten by the bug like the three of us and everyone listening to us. So what's life like now away from the unit?
Well, you know, I will tell you this. I had a backup plan. You know, I did leave the unit for two reasons. And let me tell you, it was not an easy decision. And I can also tell you that I started studying at least two different times for the sergeant's test, and I kind of cursed at myself, and I said, I don't want to do this. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to stick it out. You know, and so financial was part of it. You know, I have a couple teenage kids, and, you know, retirement is looming out there in a few years. And you know, so I really... it was time to kind of promote and, you know, and basically get a pay raise. But also I knew that one of our, we have two sergeants in our unit, and I knew that one of them would be retiring within a couple of years. In fact, he's retiring next month. And I knew that I would stand a very good chance of coming back and replacing him. Now, of course, you know, in life there are absolutely no guarantees, and I would not be the only candidate. There's other very good supervisors out there that were also in the unit as sergeants. But I just felt I would have a good chance of coming back and replacing him. But at that same time, you know, I had to. I left there knowing that I may not ever come back. But you know, I had a great time, great experiences. And I'm leaving with a pilot's license. That's not the only reason I went there, but I am leaving with a pilot's license. And, you know, so you wonder, well, how much would you miss it? I miss it. You know, but becoming a sergeant and supervising people, you know, in police work was a whole new challenge. I would love to get back to the unit, but I've also had a lot of fun since I left. And, you know, and you meet, everywhere you go, you meet new people. And, you know, and some of the deputies that work for me, or that I work with, I should say, are just great people. And, you know, you form new relationships and new bonds. And you know, it's kind of hard to say that, well, you know, I shouldn't have done this or that or whatever. So it's really all worked out great. And there's still an opportunity for me to go back in a month or so. We'll see if that happens.
Great.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, well, Daryl, for our listeners that I hopefully haven't given too much of the book away, how do they go out and get the book called Catch the Sky? How do they get that?
You know, it's up on Amazon as both a paperback and a Kindle version. And within just the last week or so, we have it up on Barnes & Noble. Now, the ebook version at Barnes and Noble isn't quite out yet. However, I think my co-author Alan is working on that. He handles that side of everything. And I do expect that to be out in just a couple weeks. So either Barnes and Noble or Amazon.com, they can pick up the book.
Perfect. Yeah, actually, in anticipation of this meeting, I did go out and buy the book. And I have an iPad, and I have a Barnes and Noble at the Nook, I guess. But I found out you can get a free Kindle app for the iPad, and it worked out fine. I was able to get the Kindle version and put it on my local tablet.
Yeah,
that was something. I don't know if a lot of people realize that, unless they go and they check at Amazon, is that you can download their e-reader, their Kindle e-reader, right on your computer, your tablet, whatever device you're using, and you don't have to go out and buy the Kindle Fire or the Kindle at all. You can download it for free and then download the book for, I think it's $9 or something like that.
Yeah,
so it's a very good deal.
And a very good read. I recommend it heartily. Like I say, I got to learn a lot about the police side of it, but you had just enough aviation to keep me excited.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was great.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Gerald, for coming on. And, I mean, congratulations on the book. And, you know, I'd like to...
And achieving a lot of really cool things along the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you very much. It's very much been a joy to be with you. And I appreciate the opportunity to tell people, you know, about this career.
Yeah.
Very good.
Absolutely. Thanks.
All right. Daryl, we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, very
okay,
good.
Thank you.
What a great conversation.
Yeah, it was.
Let me ask you, though, did you ever want to be a cop?
Heck yeah. Are you kidding me?
Why? What was the great thing about being a cop?
I don't know. It was always first of all, carrying a gun and driving a Crown Victoria.
Yeah,
I love Crown
Victoria. Ford man.
Yeah, Crown Vics are awesome. And all that, but I wanted to be an FBI agent, Border Patrol, Coast Guard guy.
Have you ever used a gun before?
I have.
You're a hunter?
No.
Do you know, I had a gun.
Did you really?
Yeah, but it wasn't a gun like anyone imagined. I was actually in college, I was an assistant scuba diving instructor. I had a spear gun.
Oh, my God.
And I fired that
like
thing.
Like a 1968 James Bond movie. Like
Thunderball.
Thunderball. Spear gun type thing. Holy
my mom
smokes.
Took me to Thunderball, and she was embarrassed.
Wow.
But you know what? I had a spear gun, and I fired that thing a half a dozen times and never underwater.
Wow.
I went out in the backyard, and I undid the rubber band because otherwise it would come back at you.
Oh, my.
And I used to just put those three rubber bands back and pull that trigger, see that spear fly.
I think I think we're going to call this show New Revelations of Mark Kapner.
Yeah. The things that you don't want to know but are going to find out about my background.
Yeah, seriously. Well, that was a that's really good. But I think Daryl did a great job of kind of explaining, you know, and hearing a little bit more about his passion on law enforcement, aviation, and bringing the things two together.
Yeah, I thought, again, it opened up so much new stuff for us and for our listeners in terms of how to get into it. And I, if I had known someone would have paid for my flight training, I might have gone a different route too. Especially, I'd love to fly a helicopter.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I have taken a lesson before, but just one, because I got a special deal on it. And it was fun, and I know what Daryl means, because in this introductory lesson, they actually have you try to hover.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can do it for a little while, and then you get into these oscillations, kind of like a porpoise on final.
Wiggle-waggle.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting the technical term. So,
yeah.
So you mentioned, you know, that you want to be FBI agent, a cop. What other kinds of things that you wanted to be maybe before you realized you wanted to be a pilot?
Well, I'll be happy to tell you, but first...
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Whoa, I heard a little start of an engine there.
Wow, false start.
Hot start.
Hot start, abort it. Anyway, but no, I think there's a lot of kind of job or career types that might also kind of go well with being a pilot. Or what else did I want to be?
Yeah.
Is that the question? I could tell you.
Thank you for remembering.
I wanted to be. It's easy for me to go off into the clouds. No pun intended.
Yeah, pun intended.
Yeah, right. But no, I. To be honest with you, if I could not be a pilot, my absolute dream job would be to be a major league umpire.
A baseball umpire?
Yeah. Are you serious? The World Series right now? This is like the best time. This is my favorite time of the year, and to watch the World Series. And I don't watch the teams. I watch the umpires. Isn't that weird?
Did you ever see the movie Naked Gun?
Yeah, where he's
Leslie with the vacuum cleaner, and he moonwalks off there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, imagine like this: if you're out there on, you know, that you're the home plate umpire. It's Game 7, and the home team is winning. They're up in the World Series, and then, you know, it's bottom of the ninth, two outs, two strikes. The batter comes up. There's a curveball that just clips the plate, and you're able to go, strike three!
Hey, it's about the players, not the umpire.
Are you kidding me? I'm sure umpires think about this.
Have you ever been an umpire?
No.
I was in Little League.
Okay.
When I got to be a teenager, and I used to do the games, and I was nervous that I wouldn't call a good game, but I actually, at that level, obviously it moves very slow, I thought I did a pretty good job.
Yeah, well, that's good.
You know what I wanted to be when I grew up, by the way?
What?
I wanted to be either an airline pilot, now don't laugh. Of course, if I say don't laugh, it really makes it's kind of a paradox. I wanted to be a comedian. But don't laugh.
Okay, I won't.
And that was the problem, and not enough people did.
Yeah, well, that's all right.
Yeah, no, that was kind of the two things that I thought about, airline pilot or comedian, and make sure you don't get the two mixed up.
Absolutely.
Because comedians can crash and burn and whatever.
Believe me, I've noticed that. I've tendered my resignation with immediate effect on the Sunday night chuckle because I cannot get anybody to laugh. And you know what? I had one listener.
But have you ever had anyone laugh at your flying?
Yeah. Absolutely. I landed at LaGuardia once, and it was on runway 22. And I absolutely planted this thing on the ground, and the captain just, you know, he didn't say anything. He did his standard call outs, but as we're pulling off the runway, he goes, so yes, I definitely have.
Actually, there was some online jokes about flight attendants and calls made after landing, after it's been put on the ground rather hard. And if you ever read those on the internet, pretty funny, you know, as we taxi what's left of our airplane back to the gate, those kinds of comments.
Yeah.
Or it wasn't the pilot's fault, it wasn't my fault, it was the asphalt. Ba-dum, boom.
Ba-dum. Man, crickets. Crickets tonight.
Yeah. Well, hey, we all get a few crickets each night.
But, you know, it's cold here in Chicago.
Oh,
so
my goodness. Yeah,
I don't
those
think crickets, the crickets are alive.
No, they're frozen. You know, one thing coming out, though, is we talk about different careers and tying it back to the conversation with Daryl Kimball, author of Catch the Sky. You know, I mentioned in the interview the connection between pilots and cops, because we have in our little flying club four police officers that are also pilots, and one was an airline pilot. But then I also look at the number of pilots that own boats, that ride motorcycles, that
have acreage of land.
Well, yeah, I don't know about that. But,
well, you know what?
But the excitement level of things that they do, and maybe that's how pilots are wired, huh?
I guess so. I think that there's, I don't know what it is. I always thought that you could identify pilots by having, a 2 or 3 acre piece of property out in the suburbs, you know, maybe like an hour and 20-minute drive from the downtown city, you know, here downtown Chicago or wherever. You could see that they have a boat, a motorcycle, and I don't know what else, a Corvette maybe?
But that's not me. I love my airplane, and, yeah, I was a scuba diver, and actually have not had the desire to be a law enforcement officer. But
why not?
I tell you, I don't know. The most fun in an activity like these, I'll put the qualifier around it, is to be in an airplane. I don't know. Matter of fact, let me ask you this. Do you like to fly alone, or do you like to fly with other people?
I like both. Yeah. But here, this is my thinking. When I fly alone, I don't feel like I'm flying alone, because you hear everybody else on the radio, and I honestly think of the airplane as a person.
I'm always say she did a good job, stuff like that, so I guess I kind of do too.
Yeah, well, what's weird, when I was flying for the airline, they had, there's this message that randomly would pop up at the most inopportune times, and the message was a do not take off message, so we weren't allowed to take off at all, but it said APM fail.
APM, auxiliary power machine?
Close. It was the airplane's personality module. I kid you not.
What the heck is an APM?
It failed. The airplane's personality checked
out
for the night.
What does that mean?
It probably meant that it popped a few Tylenol PMs and went to bed.
I don't even know what that means in the systems. Was that an electronic?
I don't know.
You don't either?
The first time it showed up, we pulled out our checklist, and it said, do not take off. And we're like, airplane personality module failed. Wow. Okay.
I get now I know what I'm going to be looking up after the show. I want to know what a personality module. Again, I'm invested in aviation. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, no, neither have we.
But you still don't, right? I know you too well. You must have looked it up.
Well, no, seriously. You pulled out the checklist, and it said APM, airplane personality module, fail, do not take off. That was the solution in the checklist. So we called it in and got a new airplane.
Yeah, so they said, we got to replace the personality module. Next thing you know, you have two new pilots come into the cockpit.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah, right. Or the airplane had to go check into a shrink or something like that. Yeah. It lost its, marbles.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I want to be an airplane psychologist. We have dog whisperers and things like that. I want to be an airplane psychologist.
Wow.
Yeah, just sit and talk to it and make sure it's purring with its engine running. I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, that's not in a good direction.
Yeah, save me. Nice dismount.
Yeah. And the scores are in 8.7, 7.8. Just kidding. No, but seriously, I think that's pretty
don't
cool.
Say serious. We don't want to be serious now.
Yeah. Well, Siri.
Serious. Siri, yeah, we should ask Siri what an APM is.
Yeah, well, maybe we should ask her.
Yeah, while you're doing that, going to do that right now?
Yeah, why not?
Oh, this is going to be embarrassing.
What is an APM?
You don't have any events on your calendar tomorrow at 8 p.m.
8 p.m.
I guess not. That would be, well, anyway. So that's a... Let's ask Siri what her favorite airplane is.
Okay, go ahead.
What is your favorite airplane?
I'd rather not say.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
She's having trouble with her personality module, it sounds like.
Exactly.
So, you flew for the airlines.
Right.
and I don't know if you're allowed to say, but I'll leave that to you. But if you could go back and fly for the majors, get her to stop. If you could fly for the majors, what airline would you want to fly for?
Emirates.
Oh, a little international?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Spice up the life.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool. Although you don't have the family in that. To me, although we have Captain Schmelzer in our club that goes to Shanghai, and he has a wonderful family, so I guess you can do both.
Yeah, you sure can. You better believe it. What about you?
You know, I would just think it'd be cool to fly anything, but it's not my favorite airline. I shouldn't say it, but the one thing that I love about United is Channel 9. I love listening to ATC and the pilots, and I don't know if other airlines do it, but the ones I fly certainly haven't offered it, so that'd be cool to kind of get people excited about aviation. Matter of fact, what I do is I put the ATC conversation on every single channel on that audio. We're going to Shanghai, and for the next 13 hours, you're going to listen to the ATC.
Yeah.
Right. I'd get real popular, I'm sure.
Yeah, right. I'm sure. The movie would be just blank, just people lip syncing or talking.
Well, we'd play airplane movies, you know, Airplane 2, Airplane 3, if there was such a thing.
Yeah. Well, you know what? This was illegal at the airline, but somebody brought in their own. We had CD players, and we were supposed to play boarding music.
And, I know it's coming.
Yeah, right. Well, it was like elevator music, and, you know, believe me, the crew members could find many different lyrics to improvise with add to this thing. But one of them actually, a flight attendant, ejected the CD once and put in their own CD, and they had Come Fly With Me playing.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Kind of our theme song.
Yeah, Come Fly With Me.
I'm going to remind everyone to go out to sparkreel.com and look up Alex Waterloo.
Yes.
And
get it right.
Again, my favorite thing about that video piece there is your mouth or lip syncing Come Fly With Me, and your left seat pilot has no clue. And I can see every time you look out of the corner of your eye and think that he might see you, you have this big smile on your face.
That was awesome. I got to say that. I get more there's more compliments on the video of like the guy I was flying with just sitting there just kind of doing the right thing, and I guess
someone had to be flying.
Command. Yeah, right.
Amazing.
Yeah, no, it was. It's fun. That was a fun little video.
Yeah, actually I want to do the same thing, but then I realized it wouldn't be original, so I'm not going to do it. I got a
copycat.
I've got to top you. You know, maybe you'll see something and you'll give me an attaboy for my Spark Reel video. I've got to put one of those together.
I always do that, though. I always comment.
I'm looking at your Facebook page. Is this a new picture over the lakeshore? It's not even lakeshore. It's over the backside of Chicago.
Yeah, it is.
Is that new?
It is new.
That's gorgeous. Everyone should check out Facebook and Al Waterloo.
Yeah, look me up on Facebook. To be honest with you, I took that picture while you were flying.
Was that me?
Yeah, that you were in that airplane when I took that picture.
Wow,
how about that?
I didn't know that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
look what I missed.
You missed a great view.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's beautiful. Especially, I love Chicago at night.
Oh, it's really
great city.
There's a don't believe that there's many other skylines really in the world that have an opportunity of shining in the night, you know, like Chicago.
Yeah, I agree. I still wish Megs was with us.
I do, too.
Yeah. I heard that turning base to land at Megs as you were coming in from over the lake, you know, you go down when you turn, was just awesome.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
No.
Did you ever fly into Megs? Oh, actually, you wouldn't have, right? I don't know.
I had my license for about 6 months, and then I woke up going to school one morning, and goodbye.
Yeah, it was March 30th or something like that, that then Mayor Daley kind of shoveled X's into the runway. I just still piss. Excuse me.
Oh, that's my upset. Goodness.
That upset.
We're on the air. Little kids are listening.
Yeah, really. Or people that act like kids.
We really know how you feel.
Yeah, well, it did make me mad.
No, I think it still has made a lot of people mad.
Yeah, a lot of pilots mad.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, well, hopefully there's a nice airport to replace it. Have you ever been to Burke Lakefront?
I have. I think we talked about this once before, but we've got a whole bunch of new listeners. Burke Lakefront in Cleveland, right next to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. We had a group of people, including one law enforcement officer in the city of Chicago, came with us because he wanted to buy a Christmas gift and wanted a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame t-shirt. So we took off in a snowstorm, landed in a blizzard with the wind howling at 90 degrees to the runway. I was landing. It was in a Cirrus SR-22. We ran over. We bought a t-shirt, and we flew home.
Wow. Wow, that's like a $2,000 t-shirt.
Yeah, well, it was either that or $100 hamburger.
Dolce & Gabbana.
Yeah, it was great. Well, that's one of those opportunities we always talk about where multiple people get in an airplane and split the cost.
Yeah.
We mentioned our flyout yesterday. We went and did the $100 hamburger thing, and we had three airplanes. We're supposed to have like 10 people, ended up with six. But the cost was less than an hour in any one of those airplanes.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
It is wonderful. I think that the community aspect, it was pretty cool because you sent out an email just saying, hey, there's open seats, here we go. And then I think a bunch of people kind of jumped on the opportunity.
They did.
We had, and it was just a great time.
Yeah. One person that had wanted to come, it just kind of the ties back to aviation, didn't get clearance from that person's spouse. So had to cancel, but that person has been very involved in a lot of flyouts. And we need to do more of that. And, you know, I think we'll pick it up again maybe here in the winter when the planes are around a little bit more. We'll maybe make it a monthly hike.
Yeah, absolutely. If there's, you know, we'd be kind of curious to hear where everybody wants to go on a flyout. And if you have any flyout ideas, be sure to tweet them to us at #SimpleFlight, and you'll be, we'll definitely take those suggestions.
Where would you want to go?
Throw together some.
For a quick, not an all-day affair, but if you're going to say, hey, I've got 3-4 hours, where would you want to go?
I would want to go to Eagle Creek in Indianapolis.
And eat at the restaurant across the street.
Right across the street, have a great dinner or lunch or whatever, and fly right home.
I've never eaten on the inside of that place. I've been on the outdoor patio.
Is fun. I mean, if you go there right around Christmas time, the whole place is covered in like those white Italian twinkle lights, and they got jazz inside. Everybody's kind of like dressed up in like
we should do that
winter
then.
Formal stuff, and well, not formal stuff, but you know, like evening, you know, casual or GQ, if that's the right word. And it's just a great environment.
I will have to do that. Have you been to Wright Patt Air Force Base in Dayton?
I have.
I've driven by. Matter of fact, many years ago, I was there as a salesperson for a technology company, and just visiting. And I never stopped because I was always on my way to an appointment. And now I regret that. So we should go there as well.
That would be fun. I went there, and it's such a cool place to go. There's so many cool airplanes. Somebody pointed out to me that I was just doing sound effects nonstop. I had no clue that I was doing it, just like a little, like a little kid. But I was just making, you know, sounds.
I didn't want to tell you that, but you've been doing that for the last hour.
I bet I have. That's just one thing. I would also. Oh, here's another thing that the crews I used to fly with. They would go out and, you know, we get on the van to go to the hotel from the airport after a day of flying. And here I was just making sound effects, and there's one flight attendant that just called me out. They're like, will you just shut up? I was like, what are you talking about? And they're like, you've made sound effects all day long, and I would just like some peace of quiet. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Isn't that funny?
It's just second nature to me, and I'm just always making sound effects, which is, I don't even know that I'm doing it, so I'm sorry.
We all have those habits. Matter of fact, I think you probably know, but what I'm known for, what I do with words.
What's that?
Make acronyms out of them.
Yes, you do make a lot of acronyms.
And I have to go back. I was in MBA, a weekend school. It took me 4 years to get my MBA, doing Saturday mornings.
That's an acronym.
What's the MBA?
Yeah. You're using them already.
IA, which is short for I am. But anyway. Finally, after 4 years of sitting next to the same person, she put up with 4 years. She turned to me, and she's a good friend, and she said, you know, you're starting to piss me off.
Wow.
And to this day, we laugh so hard because after all these years, she remained silent. So I know it gets on people's nerves, but it makes people laugh as well sometimes.
Yeah, right. Well, that's all right. You know what else is an acronym?
IBM? Anyone? I don't know. Go for it. Tell me what you're thinking.
COP.
COP? Hey, what a nice tie-in to today's show.
Yes, absolutely.
I know that acronym.
What is it?
Constable on Patrol.
You got it.
We mentioned scuba diving. You know what scuba is an acronym for?
Oh, yes. Shoot. And I'm a PADI diver, too.
Professional Association of Divers or something like that. But no, scuba is self-contained underwater breathing apparatus.
Wow. All right, we need to get off the acronym.
Yeah.
Today.
WD.
Yeah.
I mean, we do.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. We derail the acronym.
So what do you got on the calendar in aviation world this week?
Well, we've got a really awesome show coming up next week. And I'm really excited. I'm excited about all the shows, but I am excited about this next one because a lot of them, you know, this one, first of all, could potentially be our first show on the road.
Yeehaw.
How about that? And I think there's kind of a problem that we're addressing with our next guest, and it's going to be pretty fantastic.
And we can announce who our guest is.
Yeah. So who is it?
It's the senior vice president of the new position at AOPA for the advancement of the pilot community, Adam Smith, and indeed we're very excited. I don't know if you know this, and I shouldn't say this because maybe people I've worked for and all are listening. But I applied for that position.
Did you really?
I did. You know how much I love aviation.
Yeah, you do.
And I think I could help. And they wanted a lot of years of aviation experience. And, of course, silly me, all I've done has been successful in other things besides aviation, which they didn't see. So I didn't even get to interview for it.
That's okay.
Yeah, you know what? Adam has got a wonderful background. And when I see his resume compared to mine, you know, he's obviously very, very qualified for the job. But he needs our help, and I think us talking to him and learning about this will really allow him to stretch his fingers out into the pilot community, and we're going to all help him get to be very successful in his job.
Absolutely, and I think that that the problem that they're tackling is very worthwhile, and you know I think they need help.
Yeah, well, you and know, we all want to help. That's
yeah,
the
we want to help. You
premise
know,
of this program, right? To be part of the solution.
Exactly. So I think that's really neat. We have a couple looking further down the line.
Yeah.
We have KingAirNation.com coming on, and
what's the my goodness, I can't remember the rental.
Oh, Open Airplane?
They
had some really exciting news that they broadcasted out on Twitter.
I saw that, yeah.
And AvWeb wrote up a really nice article about them, so that's going to be really exciting to have those guys on. And Dave from LiveATC.net is coming on.
We've got a great lineup.
We sure do.
Yeah, we've got to live up to the billing ourselves.
I know.
Yeah, we can't be outshined there.
No, we can't, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun hearing everybody else's story and kind of tackling the problem and you know, just getting the other side of the story on a lot of this stuff.
I can't wait, as you know. What about just this upcoming next few days? You flying?
Well, I've got a couple flying lessons planned. Plus, I think there's a pending trip, King Air trip, so that will probably come to fruition, but I don't know any details quite yet.
Okay, and of course
I'm on ready alerts. Launch the Alert 5 aircraft.
Oh my God! What, I know what movie that came from.
What?
Top Gun.
Yes.
Yeah, but the ramp, not the ramp. The platform
the
was stuck.
The catapult.
It wasn't the catapult, but there was something that was stuck on that. Whatever.
Yeah, the catapult.
Oh, was it? Okay, never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great movie.
Standby catapult or something like that. But that was a... So let's tie this back to Daryl again. So Daryl's from northern San Diego, or was doing his police work out in northern San Diego.
Yeah.
You know what else is out in northern San Diego?
Top Gun School, right?
Yes. What's it called?
Not Palomar. No, what did I just screw up? That's the observatory up here at Lake Geneva, I think.
Yes. Well, how about Miramar?
Miramar, yeah. Yes. Okay.
Absolutely.
You always expose my little wordisms. So thank you very little.
You're... You're welcome. Well, that's very good. But it's going to be a great month coming up here at Simple Flight. And I'm really excited about our new technology we have on our website. Hopefully, we've seen a lot of people on their cell phones tonight listening to the show, as well as listening to SimpleFlight.net, listening to the show live. Listen, can you believe that? People are listening to us live on SimpleFlight.net.
You know, and I think it works. I'm so excited about it here in the central area, and even if you go out to Pacific. But those that listen to us on the East Coast, I mean, it's pretty late there.
Yeah. It is very late, and props to you for making it through all of our aviation ADD.
Yeah, and well, they have it too. We all share that thing. You keep forgetting.
We do. I'm glad they don't have aviation Ritalin, because that would be probably disqualify us from our medicals.
Yeah, you know, we should have. I'm thinking of a very specific AME to talk to us about that. I'll talk to my AME. I think he would like to talk to us on the radio about some of the challenges there and how he's going to a better place. Matter of fact, in this month's AOPA pilot, he authored an article, it's Dr. Bruce Chen, about, it's actually a pretty negative title, something like the 10 Ways We Kill Ourselves or something.
Oh my gosh.
But Bruce is a terrific pilot and a terrific friend and a terrific AME, and he's helped a lot of people keep their medicals and keep us flying.
Yeah, no, we had an opportunity to meet him. What was it, when I first joined the flying club back
in March,
April or something like that? Yep. No, he was really good. He inspired one of my very first blog articles, Taking Ownership of Your Other Half, which is, okay, we all love our pilot's license, but we also need a medical to fly.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just as important as the license itself.
You got to have it before you can go up and fly by yourself or act as PIC, absolutely.
Exactly. Well, that was great. But, no, it's getting pretty exciting here at Simple Flight in our little radio show. I think the next graduation thing that we need for our show is a little on-air red light or something.
Okay, I can bring that. I don't know where we... You mean just to put outside the door here?
Yeah, I don't know. Just for the heck of it.
Actually, you know what I'd like to do? We have so many pilots that come through here, and they get off their airplanes on the ramp, and they look at us through the window, and you can see they're curious. I want to put a sign up, but then we should put a sign up that says, come on in, we want to interview you or something, and get some transient pilots coming through.
Come on in, the water's fine.
Yeah, I like the way you did that. The water's fine. You're from an Arkansas too, right?
No, I'm from Chicago, but I spent many summers in Arkansas, a good portion of my life, and it's funny, when I go down there, it doesn't take long for me to pick up a little drawl. I came back with a little drawl from when I originally got my, getting my pilot's license in high school.
Well, I don't pick up drawls or anything like that, but I do pick up sayings.
Y'all?
Not so much like that. I was in school many years ago in Iowa, and we're here, we say, like, really? Like, you're questioning. Back then, they would always go, really? It was like in a term of agreement, but the way they really...
Really?
Yeah, and when they wanted to order a beer, you'd say, call them draws.
Give me a draw?
Give me a draw, which, you know, like now,
wow.
We would draw one out of the tap, but they would say, yeah, well, give me two draws. Give me three draws, whatever. So,
dang.
Yeah, so you pick up some of the words. Do you know what they call, I can see the time, I don't want to stop, though. do you know what they call a water fountain in Milwaukee?
I used to work in Milwaukee for 2 years, so I think I would know, but I don't.
A bubbler.
A bubbler?
A bubbler. What the heck is a bubbler? It's like 50 miles from here, and I never heard of a bubbler.
Wow. Well, that's...
And I tell you what they call Illinois people, but I don't think that's appropriate.
That's one of your other acronyms, and we don't have to bring that one up.
Okay. Consider it not brought up.
Yeah,
move on.
Well, that's very good. Well, we just got clearance from the tower, unfortunately, that we have to go in and land.
Yeah, we have to... that's a good way to put it. I was going to say our release time is fast approaching. We got to get the heck out of here.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
I like the landing metaphor.
Absolutely. So we got our EFC time passed, unfortunately. And this is the worst part of the week right now, is just saying goodbye.
Right. Yeah, I agree. But our thanks to Daryl Kimball, author of Catch the Sky. the adventures and misadventures of a police did I get that right? Police helicopter pilot. I think
absolutely.
I got that one right.
And I think that's a great thing. What you know, his story is pretty phenomenal. His book is really great. Both you and I reviewed it before we sat down with him, and yeah. We definitely suggest it. It's a fun read. There's a lot of stories. There's a lot of
yeah, not all airplanes and helicopters either. There's a lot of just police work stuff.
Right, you can connect with connect with it just because it's really cool stuff.
Yeah, and my thanks to you for manning all this technology, mixing boards and sound effects and all that. You do a great job. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you. And I think if we were at the Academy Awards right now, we'd probably have the music playing, drowning us out.
Yeah, and the booze and the hisses with the cane pulling
yeah, right.
up the stage.
Yeah, so on that note, thank you, everybody. Thanks for joining us tonight. It's been great having you. And unfortunately, it's going to be another 168 hours until we talk to you next. But that doesn't sound like a lot, so I'm going to go with that.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, everyone. Have a great night. Thanks for listening.
Blue skies.
And tailwinds.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Simple Flight Radio, ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.